Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball-related from Sunday, August 30th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as second baseman J.J. Weatherholt was placed on the 10-day IL with wrist tendonitis. Big blow to a guy who's trying to make an argument to be the NL Rookie of the Year. There's been lots of discourse about the race between him and Sal Stewart, but this is a point in Stewart's favor as Weatherholt hits the IL. Weatherholt had shifted to shortstop with Mason Wynn on the injured list. So with Weatherholt out, Thomas Segese will take over as the Cardinals' everyday shortstop. Third baseman Cesar Prieto was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, we have starting pitcher Emerson Hancock, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an adductor strain. Makes sense. His last start was rough, and it was out of character given how good Hancock has been throughout the season. The Mariners were already employing a six-man rotation, so there won't need to be a corresponding move in the rotation, at least. Reliever Nick Davila was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Next, third baseman Luis Rengifo was placed on the 10-day IL with a knee sprain. He suffered it while making a throw home, pursuing a rundown between second and third. It was a weird play, an awkward play, and he was left lying on the field for a while. But Rengifo out with a knee sprain. Outfielder Samad Taylor was activated from the 10-day IL in a corresponding move after missing about 2 months with an oblique strain. Taylor will be on the short side of a left field platoon with Dustin Harris, but he made a blunder in his first game with the Padres, back with the Padres here, catching a ball in left field and sort of dunking it over the left field fence and turning it into a game-tying home run. Not the best look there from Samad Taylor in his return to the majors. The Padres also placed first baseman Gavin Sheets on the 10-day IL with a foot sprain. Second baseman Sungmin Song was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, and Sheets had been on the strong side of a DH platoon for the Padres, and it looks like Song will replace Sheets on the strong side of that platoon with Austin Hayes on the short side. Next, outfielder Byron Buxton was placed on the 10-day IL with a hip impingement. This hip injury has been a recurring injury for Buxton. He's somebody who's been oft injured throughout his entire career, so he's likely to miss more than the minimum time, though. I know the Twins are going to want him back if they're going to want to have any chance of making the playoffs. Walker Jenkins has been filling in for Buxton over the past few days as they were determining whether or not they wanted to place him on the IL. So Jenkins will continue to man center field in Buxton's absence. In a corresponding move, outfielder Gabriel Gonzalez was recalled for the minors. He's a 22-year-old right-handed hitter who's the Twins' number 11 prospect. At AAA, he's batted .254 with 15 homers and an 88 WRC+, but he was much better during his rise through the minors. He did make his MLB debut in a single game in May. He had a cup of coffee, Gabriel Gonzalez did, and it looks like he's going to be on the short side of a left field platoon for the Twins moving forward. Next, starting pitcher George Klaassen was placed on the 15-day IL with back inflammation. Klaassen had been emerging as a promising starter for the Angels, which has been a tough commodity to find in Anaheim over the past few years. So tough blow to the Angels rotation, not like they were in contention anyway. And they were running a six-man rotation, so there won't need to be a corresponding rotational move in Anaheim to replace George Klaassen, but reliever Mitch Ferris was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, reliever Sam Henches was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. That's another setup guy injured for the Giants. They've just been losing every guy that they have lined up in that role. And it's been a ton of rotational injuries as well. The whole pitching staff in San Francisco heading to the IL, and thus starting pitcher Matt Wilkinson was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. And Tugboat should stick in the rotation moving forward. In terms of transactions, starting pitcher Luis Gil was recalled from the minors. He's been a starter throughout his career, but he's expected to pitch out of the bullpen after doing so at AAA and with the Yankees having a full rotation at the moment. Gil has the ability to provide multiple innings in relief, and I always thought his stuff played much better in a relief role. It always made more sense as a two-pitch guy with poor control. He makes more sense as a reliever, so maybe Gil can step up as the closer of the future for the Yankees as David Bednar is a free agent this offseason. Reliever Yerry De Los Santos was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, we have outfielder Roman Anthony, who was activated from the 60-day IL after missing nearly 4 months with a finger injury. Anthony led off and performed at DH. He was slotted into the DH role and the leadoff spot in the lineup in his return to the majors. And Anthony is probably going to see a lot of time at DH as the club eases him into the action, but he could see some time in left field as well. But he should be leading off every day moving forward. And catcher Mickey Gasper was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, shortstop Trevor Story was activated from the 60-day IL after missing 3.5 months with a sports hernia. Story should return to being the Red Sox everyday shortstop as Andrew Monasterio heads to the bench and second baseman Anthony Siegler was optioned to the minors. In terms of news, reliever Abner Uribe is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL today to rejoin the Brewers bullpen as their top setup option to closer Trevor McGill. Uribe missed about 3 weeks with a forearm strain. Next, catcher Will Smith is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL tomorrow to reclaim everyday catching duties for the Dodgers. Smith has been out with neck inflammation for about 3 months now, so it'll be a welcome return for the Dodgers, who have been relying on Hunter Fiducia and Bent Rortvedt behind the plate, with both Will Smith and who's the other guy? I forgot his name. I know his face. He's got that face that everybody wants to punch at right now. But regardless, Will Smith will return to being the Dodgers' everyday catcher. Next, we have outfielder Lázaro Montes, and he's expected to have his contract selected from the minors by the Mariners. He's a 21-year-old left-handed hitter. Dalton Rushing, that's who it is. I didn't want people to think that I don't have that knowledge of pulling Dalton Rushing off the dome. He's been injured for so long, it's hard to keep his name on the mind. Regardless, he is currently injured. Back to Lázaro Montes, who is the Mariners' number 5 prospect and the number 56 prospect in baseball at AA and AAA. He's batted .247 with 38 home runs, 8 stolen bases, and a 137 WRC plus. So a lot of power. He's got good plate discipline, 14% walk rate, but Montes is one of those 3 true outcome guys. He strikes out a lot, 31% of the time in the minors this year. Hits a ton of home runs, lots of power, and he walks a lot, but not a lot of singles. You know, it's going to be one of those guys that's not great in points leagues, but he should be pretty great elsewhere. I'd be picking him up in the majority of leagues. I just don't know exactly where he's going to play. Taylor Ward could be forced to the short side of a platoon, either with Montes or at DH with Dominic Canzone. But if they're calling up Montes, they're going to find a way to get him into the lineup. And lastly, catcher Leo Bernal is expected to have his contract selected from the minors. He's a 22-year-old switch hitting catcher, and he's the Cardinals' number 7 prospect. At AAA, he's batted .279 with 16 homers, 9 steals, and a 116 WRC plus. And he's likely to take over everyday catching duties from current backstop Jimmy Crooks in St. Louis. That's Leo Bernal. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Sunday, a day in which we had just 14 games on the slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Pete Crow Armstrong, who did all he could, but the Cubs lost to the Reds. He went 2-for-5 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 38 home runs now. The first one went 417 feet at 108 miles per hour, and the second one went 431 feet at 105 miles per hour. That's 2 more home runs for PCA after he just went deep 3 times on Saturday. What a huge weekend it's been for him, and what a huge month it's been for him. 14 home runs in August for Pete Crow Armstrong, and that's the most by a player 24 years old or younger in a month since Ken Griffey Jr. went deep 15 times in May of 1994. And PCA's 31 home runs since the beginning of June are 7 more than any other player in baseball right now. I think it was like a week or two ago, I was saying that I thought Ohtani deserved the MVP award over PCA, but the way he's finishing this season, it might be no contest. He might be doing everything he can as the game's premier defender in center field. And with a potential 40-40 season ahead of us with a 950 OPS, that's pretty tough to beat. I know Ohtani's doing unique things, but it's getting to that point where you're now crossing the threshold by having your own historic season, whereas Ohtani's having historic seasons that only he has done, but it's not unprecedented anymore. It's unprecedented by anybody else, but not by him. It's a really tough conversation, but it's one for a longer podcast. PCA is second in MLB with 38 home runs, trailing only Kyle Schwarber. He's also second with 99 runs, 7 triples, and a 954 OPS. He's fifth in MLB with 32 stolen bases, sixth with 91 runs batted in, and seventh with 149 hits. Just an absolutely amazing season for Pete Crow Armstrong. Next, we have shortstop Gunnar Henderson, who helped the Orioles to win in Sacramento, going 4-for-4 with 3 runs, a triple, 2 home runs, and 5 runs batted in. He's up to 22 homers now. The first one went 413 feet at 109 miles per hour, and the second one also went 413 feet at 104 miles per hour. It's been a difficult campaign for Henderson, to say the least, as he's batted just 223 with a 715 OPS after being considered one of the best players in baseball entering 2026. And while his struggles have continued into the second half, he's actually severely underperformed his expected metrics. It's not like he's sporting hard hit or barrel metrics that are impressive, but his ex-WOBA was nearly 40 points higher than his WOBA entering Sunday. His 4-for-4 outing did a good job of closing that gap, and it's hopefully a sign that Henderson's going to finish the season strong. He's going to be a very interesting topic in draft season. Lastly, we've got catcher Austin Wells, who helped the Yankees to win against the Red Sox, going 2-for-2 with 2 runs, 2 home runs, and 5 runs batted in. He's up to 10 homers now. The first one went 343 feet at 106 miles per hour, and the second one went 358 feet at 91 miles per hour. And after belting 21 homers last year, Wells not only looks like a perfect fit for Yankee Stadium, but he seemed like one of the more reliable catchers in baseball, especially just all around. He's great defensively, but also offensively. His bat has turned into a noodle this year, though, as he's striking out more than ever and struggling to impact the ball like he did in the first 3 years of his career. It's been a launch angle issue, as Wells has seen his pop-up rate skyrocket, but everything else is in line, though. Not too many ground balls or less contact or lower bat speed. It's all still normal, and that gives me hope that Wells can get back to the baseline that he set entering the season as a power-hitting, defensive-minded catcher, and maybe Sunday's performance is just the start. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Sunday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Max Scherzer, who helped the Blue Jays to win against the Mariners, tossing 7 shutout innings, allowing just 1 hit and 1 walk while striking out 10. He induced 17 whiffs with 38% CSW across 97 pitches, and Scherzer earned the golden goal by tying for the MLB lead with 17 whiffs to earn the gallows pole and earning the King Cole by leading baseball with 38% CSW. What a performance for Max Scherzer. This was the start that allowed him to surpass Gaylord Perry for 9th on the all-time strikeouts leaderboard. He now has 3,536 strikeouts in his career. It was Scherzer's 115th game with 10 strikeouts or more, and he's the third pitcher in MLB history in that category. He's in third place, trailing only Randy Johnson's 212 such starts and Nolan Ryan's 215. So Scherzer, one of the best strikeout artists in the history of baseball. He became the oldest pitcher with 10 or more strikeouts and 1 or fewer hits since Nolan Ryan threw a no-hitter with 10 strikeouts in May of 1991. And both he and Ryan are the only pitchers ever with 10 or more strikeouts and 1 or fewer hits in a game that were age 42 or older in the history of baseball. So Scherzer, not only an incredible career, but doing things that we have only seen some of the best old pitchers in baseball ever do. A golden goal, 10 strikeouts, 7 shutout innings for Max Scherzer. What an incredible outing here. Next, we have Tyler Molly versus the Rockies. 6 2/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned, no walks, and 9 strikeouts. He induced 17 whiffs with 31% CSW across 89 pitches. And Molly tied for the Gallows pole leading baseball with those 17 whiffs. And he's been nails since joining the Braves, allowing no more than 2 runs in 5 starts. And he's allowed more than 1 run just once when he allowed 2 runs. And that's led to a 1.48 ERA and a 27% strikeout rate in 5 starts since the trade deadline. And while Molly's gotten even better since being traded, he's been great since returning from the IL in late June, pitching to a 2.77 ERA and a 24% strikeout rate in his past 12 starts. Increased velocity and a great feel for his splitter have propelled him to success, and they did again on Sunday as 4-seamers induced 11 whiffs and 37% CSW, while splitters induced 6 whiffs and earned 74% strikes, and both pitches combined for all 9 strikeouts. Just keep starting Molly even as he faces the Phillies back-to-back across his next 2 starts. And lastly, we've got Zebby Matthews against the White Sox. 8 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 1 earned, no walks, and 5 strikeouts. He induced 9 whiffs with 20% CSW across 103 pitches. And Matthews had been volatile all season, 4.58 ERA on the year, but he's run into a Vargas rule recently with 3 straight starts with just 1 run allowed apiece and increasing inning totals in each subsequent start, culminating in his pitching into the 9th on Sunday, where he ultimately put 2 men on and watched an inherited runner score to ruin his scoreless outing. Regardless, let's look into how he's doing this. The 23 whiffs he had last time suggested his success was warranted, but just 9 whiffs across 25 outs here suggests otherwise. Matthews is heavily reliant on batted balls returning outs, and he's doing a great job of avoiding the heart of the zone right now, which is usually what you get with a Vargas rule, and that's allowed him to pitch above his means. And I'm fine streaming him on the south side of Chicago next because he's commanding better than he usually does, but he's not a must roster by any means. That's Zebby Matthews. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Sunday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Jacob Latz pitched a perfect 9th for his 27th save. Mason Montgomery recorded his 7th save with a perfect 9th. Josh Hader pitched a scoreless 9th for his 21st save. Yennier Cano recorded his 3rd save with a perfect 9th as Andrew Kittredge and Rico Garcia were unavailable after pitching on back-to-back days and in 3 of the past 4. Orion Kerkering worked around a run in a 4-out save for his 2nd save of the year. Yoan Duran wasn't going to be pushed consecutive days immediately after recovering from an illness. And lastly, Emilio Pagan worked around a solo shot for his 19th save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Clayton Beter pitched a hitless 7th and 8th with the Nationals up by 1. Raisel Iglesias pitched a perfect 9th in a tie game. Cade Smith pitched a hitless 9th with the Guardians leading by 10. He hadn't pitched since Tuesday, and the Guardians are off today, so this was a maintenance outing. Mason Miller served up a 2-run home run to blow his 2nd save, but as I mentioned, this was sort of Samad Taylor's fault as he caught a ball that is and out like 99% of the time, 99% catch probability, but he caught it and then threw it over the wall, basically slam dunked that into a home run. That is tough for Mason Miller, who just gave up a home run in his last outing, and it was something he hadn't done in over a year. So back-to-back outings with the home run, not really what you expect to see from Mason Miller, but you can't blame him for that one. And the Padres would eventually lose that one in 11 innings as the defense just continued to fail them. Brian Baker pitched a perfect 10th in a tie game that the Rays would win in 11 innings. And lastly, Jacob Webb pitched a scoreless 9th, trailing by 3. He hadn't pitched since last Tuesday, so this was a maintenance outing for Jacob Webb. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Monday, August 31st, a day in which we'll have just 12 games on our slate. My matchup of the day is Kyle Harrison versus Clay Holmes. Not only is this an intra-division matchup, but there's some intrigue with both of these guys. Kyle Harrison has been great all year, but I'm a little bit concerned. The velocity is down. His command is not as exceptional as it was earlier in the year. I know the Brewers want him healthy for the playoffs, so I'm curious how Harrison looks in this one, whereas Clay Holmes is in a perfect situation as the preeminent ground ball pitcher in baseball, pitching for the premier defense in baseball. So he could dominate here against the Brewers in what could potentially be a playoff matchup. In terms of probable starters, we've got three guys in the auto starts tier, including Harrison. We've also got Jacob DeGrom versus the A's and Peyton Tolley versus the Mariners. Our probably starts tier has eight guys, and our questionable starts tier has six, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Jackson Jobe in Minnesota. He should survive five frames, no problem, against the Twins lineup that is missing Byron Buxton at the moment. Jackson Jobe has some upside as well with some strikeouts, so definitely worth the try there with Jackson Jobe. I'd also keep an eye out for Anthony Kay in Houston. He's been a very solid Toby throughout the season and more so in the second half. The Astros will certainly face him with a bunch of right-handed batters, but Kay's got a pretty good changeup. He's got the potential for being a swatch from time to time, and I think Kay should be pretty solid in Houston. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Padres and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. We'll see Michael King square off against Brady Singer in that one. And I'd also target Orioles and Rockies hitters in Coors Field. We'll see Kyle Bradish square off against Tanner Gordon in that one. And now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Yennier Cano has pitched in 3 days in a row, so one of Andrew Kittredge or Rico Garcia will get a save for the Orioles. Josh Hader has pitched in three of the past 4 days, so if the Astros want to give him the day off, Brian Abreu could step up for a save. And lastly, Brian Baker has pitched on back-to-back days, so one of Kevin Kelly or Tyler Wells should be the temporary closer for the Rays on Monday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers, and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.